Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And I am having so much fun lately. There's just so many exciting things going on. And one thing I want to let my audience know about is they're going to have Ted Andrews, which is an amazing metaphysical speaker, and wrote Animal Speaks at Crystal Voyage in Seattle. So check out www.crystalvoyage. And the reason I'm mentioning this is I hope to have Ted Andrews on the show next month. I'm so excited about that. The other thing I want to do is remind everyone, the listening audience, please don't call in till half past the hour because Don's manning everything, bless his heart there. But when it is time to call in, you could call in at 1-877-876-5227. Today it's my great pleasure to welcome to my show Julie Ingram. She is a New York Times best-selling author and a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist. She received her Master's of Arts degree at Arizona State University and graduate work at Stanford University. She's also studied in Vienna and Austria. She comes to our show today with 38 years of clinical experience and has specialized in regressions and spiritual therapies for the past 20 years. She's an amazing teacher and workshop facilitator. She has lectured at amazing places. She's lectured for the American Psychology Association and the California Institute of Integral Studies. And I first met Julia 10 years ago when the book The Messenger came out. She's co-author of that book. And that's when, really, I got my first personal experience with her in a past life regression. Julia, welcome to my show.
Hi, Atira. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm so excited. And what is amazing is you have just come out with an incredible new book, and it's sort of divine timing with all the excitement over the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
You wrote the book, The Lost Sisterhood, The Return of Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary and the Other Holy Women. Amazing title, amazing book.
That's what I hear.
It is. I mean, you know, it's interesting to me because, you know, I was actually in Egypt when they had Mother Mary appear at a church there. And so it's really interesting that everyone's sort of abuzz with this, you know, information that came out in the Da Vinci Code. But it actually had been out before then, hadn't it?
The book? Oh, yeah. It came out in 2004.
Yeah.
And I actually started writing it in the summer of 1997.
So you were hot on the trail of it, all this information.
All of this information. Well, I've been collecting that information since 1992, actually. I started writing in 97. So this book took a long time to write, or to get it right.
Let's start a little bit about how you got into regression. You know, that's pretty. That's a pretty amazing leap for a therapist.
Well, my story is very similar to Brian Weiss's in that I was trained in traditional psychotherapy and even worked in a psychiatric hospital in the beginning of my career and was doing very traditional talk therapy, but I also did hypnotherapy. And my beginning wasn't in discovery with a client. I went for a past life regression myself just out of curiosity. Mainly to see if I could do it.
Julie, I'm going to ask you to just move your mouthpiece so you can speak up a little louder. I want to make sure everybody hears what's going on.
Oh, sure. Okay. Maybe I'll take the headset off. I've heard that it's not as clear.
Oh, there we go. Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
That's clearer. Yay.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
I can hold with one. I can talk with one hand up to my ear.
So it's interesting to me because really, truly, most therapists, you know, if you hear voices or you see visions, you know, we're getting good drugs and locked up.
Yeah. Well, and I have had a few of those cross my path since I went into past life regression. But, you know, after I had my own experience of it, and I was so blown away by that experience, I never looked back. I learned how to do it. I practiced on anybody who would let me. I joined the Association for Past Life Research and Therapies.
It's really a powerful tool.
Yeah.
It's really a powerful experience. You know,
I remember yours.
I know. I do remember mine. I really, you know, actually, until I met you, I didn't even think about that you could go back to a specific thing. And when I had my regression, I asked to go back to find out where I developed my gifts,
the
healing of hearing
gifts, yeah.
And things. And so when that happened, it really blew me away because I went to Egypt, and it's interesting for me because I had always had such an interest in Egypt since I was 5 years old. So it was really a trip, a great trip, Julia.
In more than one sense of the word.
Yeah,
well,
and
we get so many clues about our past lives, just noticing the kind of cultures we're fascinated in, the kind of countries we feel drawn to visit, and the people that we're attracted to, and the people that we can't stand when we first meet them. You know, there's just all those clues that past lives are involved here.
Well, the messenger really changed lives, A, because it connected
yeah.
people with angels, but B, because I think it was a very left-brain businessman who had this incredible experience and then went back to biblical times. And it was amazing how many people, how many clients that I read for in connection with that book.
Huh.
And your work in that book was very profound because you kept following the thread. And I found that so fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
And this new book, now how does it differ from The Messengers?
Because The Messengers, let me start by talking about The Messengers just a little bit for anybody who hasn't read it or wants to have a review. This is the story of a high-profile businessman, Nick Bunick, lives in Oswego, Oregon, who had been told by psychics for many, many years that he had known Jesus, that he'd walked with Jesus, and in fact was Paul the Apostle. And he said, yeah, 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 that's interesting, but what about my business? What about my kids? And finally, a psychic of, like yourself introduced Nick to me. And we did 13 past life regressions all on that one lifetime. And the transcripts from that past life regression from his life beginning at age 9 as Saul until his death of Paul in Rome became the second half of The Messengers. And it was the story of the brotherhood, Paul and Peter and John and John the Baptist, and of course, Yeshua. But it was all about the men and the men's struggles with what to do with the fledgling movement after Yeshua's death.
Which we have heard about so much in the Bible and so
that's
much
what's in the Bible.
Christian religions, I mean, really have focused on the male side of that.
And the women
yet,
were always on the
Mary's
sidelines.
Pretty important.
They were there, but they were making tea and washing feet.
And having babies, having Joshua, you know.
So while Nick and GW were getting love letters from the messengers, I was getting questions and phone calls, and some of them from women that were a little irritated. What about the women? And I was asking myself that same question because I had left a very, very patriarchal religion in my 30s. And longed for a spiritual home that recognized both the divine mother as well as divine father. And so that question, what about the women, was kind of the driving force behind the lost sisterhood. And as you know, those divine orchestrators would have it, they brought to my door many, many women who tapped back into that time 2,000 years ago and told me very fascinating stories about how the women were an extremely essential part of that movement. Mary, the mother, was Yeshua's first teacher.
You know, and I have a deep background in the Middle East because I've imported from Egypt for over 20 years. Excuse me, I've been over there about 14 times. And, you know, I do see the role of the women, even though, you know, we think they're hidden behind everything, and to some extent today they are. But I know, really, when you read really ancient history, they had their roles, and it was much different than it's portrayed today.
Yes, yes. When you look at the Greek culture, which was side by side and really influencing that part of the world, too, women owned property, women inherited, women could own businesses.
Absolutely.
It was just that small group of women who had to hide in the shadows.
Well, I think, unfortunately, a lot of history was written by men, too. You know,
I think maybe all of it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to be nice. Okay. But it's
maybe
true. You know, that
up until the last 100 years or so.
Right. And it's true. I mean, when you read some of the ancient history of Egypt, though, you see that there were women who had strong roles, too. And so I can see where we're having regressed down the regressions with the messengers then led you into this new avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And in your new book, there's like 15 stories, correct? 15 women?
I had
women?
To choose from boxes and boxes
hard.
Of client transcripts.
Hard choice, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And just how to tell the story was kind of tricky, but I did manage to do that, and I wove the stories of 15 women that I worked with to make one story, and that was about the women who were, all an integral part of this
okay.
spiritual movement.
Right. What's involved when you do the past life regression? I mean,
well, you know.
I want my audience to know.
There's nothing mysterious about it. Hypnosis is relaxation with focus. That's all it is. I prompt my client to go back to a time and a place that will answer the question that they come to work with me with. Mm-hmm. If they believe they've had a past life 2,000 years ago, I simply say that. If you've had a past life 2,000 years ago in the Holy Land, you'll go there now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're there.
Right.
And they usually are. And
yeah.
Then all their job is just to report what shows up.
Well, I know when I had my regression with you, you really didn't lead me. You would ask a question, but really, you know, they were questions that were like, where are you? What are you seeing? You know, what are you wearing? It wasn't led like, who are, you know, you're so-and-so. It was never led in any direction.
Oh, I'm very, very careful about that.
Yeah, you're very professional about that. You know, it's interesting to me because I used to see double halos, and I never really connected that when I saw that symbol, a double halo, it meant that people walked at the time of Christ until I got involved with the messengers, and then I started putting two and two together because I was doing so many people that had lived at biblical times. It was like droves because they were so drawn by that book.
Yeah, good.
So it's interesting that there are symbols, for me anyway, now I'm sure there are for other clairvoyants as well, that kind of connect that they lived at that time. And so even in your regressions, I think it's important, because I know somebody's going to ask this question if I don't ask it for them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know they aren't just imagining?
We've done some research on this, some colleagues and I, of putting somebody in a hypnotic trance and then saying, imagine a past life. We can't do it. That
wow.
If we access that part of our brain that we're in charge of, that we're using to imagine,
mm-hmm.
We come up with very cliched, stale, dry. You can feel that it's not a past life. So we don't go to that part of the brain. We say, remember.
Well, for me, when I had the experience, I have to tell you, it was like being there.
Yeah.
I mean, you could feel the sand in my feet. I mean, it was a very interesting experience. Very unlike anything else I'd had except for a couple lucid dreams. So it was really pretty powerful.
Well, people vary in their the intensity of the experience. We all have a little bit different way of accessing it. So some are very dramatic and kinesthetic. Nick Bunick, for instance, I think slips back through time and space. I think he actually goes back in time in some mystical way. Very rare that I encounter that. Most of us see a little bit, feel a little bit, hear a little bit, know a little bit. But when it hits the emotions, you know, I can't make that up.
Yeah, it was very emotional for me. I was very
I remember.
I was very surprised it was that hard. Because, you know, it's funny, when you're in the biz, when you're a psychic, you think you've already experienced a lot of things. You don't think you're going to get tripped up too much, but it really was powerful.
Well, sometimes some psychics are really hard to regress because they're so used to seeing and knowing things that they're kind of in charge of their own internal process, which I think is what makes you good psychics.
Why do you think so many people...
You were able to let go of that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, because I really wanted the experience. You know, I really did. For me, it was important to just know where this developed for me. So to go to the core of it was a treasure.
Gift people can give themselves is if you want an ability that you may have had in a past life, for instance, if you wanted to expand your your abilities mm-hmm. to something else that you know maybe that in the past life you had. You can access that in the past life and bring it into the present.
That's really what we did in our regression. I went to know where I developed it and was there anything I needed to bring back with me. And when I did that, things got more vivid. It was very interesting for me.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Why do you think all of a sudden you're getting so many people that walked at the time of Christ?
It's fascinating to me. It's truly a phenomenon, and it continues to this day. In fact, this week, I worked with another woman who tapped into Mary Magdalene. So I get asked that question a lot. As a matter of fact, I get asked, how can there be so many Mary Magdalenes? You haven't asked that question, but anybody who reads the book.
Oh, they will. They will, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I've got that far. I got tons of questions for you, darling.
So, you know, there's more than one Ruth. There's more than one Mother Mary. There's more than one Peter. There's more than one Paul. There are numerous incarnations of these major characters from 2,000 years ago, and by far the most popular is Mary Magdalene.
You know, so, I love that you brought that up because, you know, when I work with people, I'll say, oh, you have the essence of, you know, it's like I find that more than once, like you said. And at first it bothered me because I'm going, like, how can there be... You know, how come I'm tapping into another
mm-hmm.
Paul or something? You know what I mean? It was very interesting
to
me.
How can there be more than one?
Right,
reincarnation,
right.
You know, this...
But we forget we reincarnate.
And I'm that person, and then I'm another person.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think it's these major archetypal figures
mm-hmm.
that incarnate over and over and over again and can be aspected in a lot of people. Now, the why of it is interesting. And I think it's because we have, throughout history, cycled this story and recycled this story many, many times. When you look back into the Egyptian history, and you'll see this same story with Horus and Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 20 times, some scholars say 40 times, the same story of a savior who died and was resurrected on the third day. Shows up in different parts of the world with different names, but the story is very similar. I think it's an archetypal story that is reenacted over and over again. I think it's being reenacted today because we need it. I think we've called it in because we need this. We want it and we need it.
Well, I think we need the feminine. I think the masculine has ruled a long time.
And that's why the Magdalene is so strong, because she represents the feminine.
She does. I can remember when there started to be, you know, visitations of Mary, in particular Egypt, I remember because I was there.
Uh-huh.
But there's been visitations or visions of her in many, many places.
Oh, that Medjugorje.
You know, yeah, Medjugorje.
Uh-huh.
I mean, tons of places.
Yeah.
But even more recently in a lot of places, you know. So it's interesting that this energy is coming in that way. I also read a book called The Woman with the Alabaster Jar
mm-hmm.
by Starbird?
Margaret Starbird. She lives
and
in Seattle, you know.
Yeah, and you did some work with her. You actually shared the state and did some places where you're both speaking, because I really think the books blend together in many ways. I think in your book, though, there was such a strong sense of the emotional reaction that these women felt and the core coming together of something that was so amazing to me.
I think there's an authenticness to listening to stories where there's feeling and
The emotion in it was
powerful.
Uh-huh. And it gave a little interesting twist in some ways about the take on the, I guess, what we would believe women's roles were in Christian times, you know, from a Christianity point of view. I really feel like when you read the book, there's a bigger role for us as women.
I love the sections that talk about how the women participated in healing. Mother Mary tells a story about going to work with lepers, and she gives a wonderful description of how she basically channeled energy through her body. And another woman tells about her job when Yeshua was doing healings. She said her job, her name is Anne, her job was to follow along behind him and kind of do the aftercare of people who were healed.
Healing crisis, you know?
Indeed. You know, somebody who couldn't see, suddenly they can see, and here comes Anne along behind, you know, to take their arm.
Now, when you talk of Anne, is that Anne?
No.
No,
this Anne is nowhere in the New Testament.
Okay. Wow.
She was just a volunteer.
Wow, amazing. How has this affected, these regressions affected these 15 women? How has that changed their life? Their living
every
today?
Every one of these 15 women that I used in the book were in their own way healers already.
Wow.
Either teachers in the nursing profession, Reiki, one of the Mary Magdalene's was a pediatrician.
So virtually they're carrying on their work.
They felt called to teach, be healers already.
So they were carrying on their work unbeknownst to them anyway.
Well, the crack up for me is when I give talks on this book and I ask how many of them are attracted to Mary Magdalene or how many are aspects of Mary Magdalene, and they raise their hands and grin, and then I say, how's the book coming? And then they laugh because many of the women who have been aspects of Mary Magdalene feel very called to write books, to write essays, to write messages from Mary. My hunch is it's unfinished business for this archetype. I think she probably wrote during that time,
wow.
And those writings have been ignored. And there's nothing more powerful in a past life than unfinished business.
I know. It'll come and get you.
Come and get you.
It will truly come and get
you. So Magdalene is just like, she's such a great strategizer. She's engaging these women who have writing gifts. You know, we have something to say, and you are going to help me say it.
Wow. I love that. I love that. You know, spirit reaches across the millenniums or whatever the need is.
Yeah.
What do you, as you've done this work, do you claim that Mary Magdalene and the Holy Mother Mary have actually reincarnated?
You know,
somebody's going to ask that.
Judgment,
you know that.
For my clients, a few of them have said, "Do you think I'm the real one?" And I, you know, I don't touch that. I just say it's up to you to figure that out. But I actually don't think Mary Magdalene, the Mother Mary, or Jesus have in fact fully reincarnated in human bodies. I think they are aspected.
I agree with you, because in my work I really find that. I find the aspect of them, but not the full thing.
Yeah.
Because the energy, if you step in that kind of presence, you know it, you know, and you sense it. And I have not yet found what I would consider the whole package, but certainly
I have not yet either.
Wow.
And so, I don't expect to, actually. I don't think that they would be, I don't think they'd be welcomed or recognized today. So I think it's working. I think this is brilliant.
Whoever, I think it's a different level.
Whoever has engineered this plan, I think it's brilliant to be aspected in a lot of people. It spreads the work out. It spreads the calling among many. And we have this great opportunity to heal these archetypal wounds from the past so that hopefully we don't keep just replaying the same story.
Well, hopefully it's changing the paradigm.
I think we are, in our present consciousness and with the technology that we have, able to not only just replay the old story, but actually heal it and move into some kind of maturity.
One can only pray for that as we speak.
Yeah.
Julia, you know, when The Messenger came out, I can remember, because I did a lot of radio and things connected with that, and I'm sure you did, and...
Yeah.
You know, Christians had a little hard time with it. I would think you would be hearing from Christians and especially Catholics about this.
I didn't hear from but one person about the messengers, and she was actually quite kind. She called and wondered if I had been deceived by Satan into writing the messengers. And I thanked her for her concern because she really, you know, did believe that that was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, there's just too much love here. It cannot be. It cannot be anything but love. There's just too much love here.
Good answer. Good answer. Well, it's true. I'm sure that there's always going to be. I mean, they have been really, you know, kind of broiling poor Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code. I mean, the skeptics, the churches, everything. And, you know, I think it's very threatening for the status quo to be questioned in any way, whether it's all factual or not, because he never said it was all factual. But it
it's a novel.
Yeah, it brought up questions. Really what I thought it did was facilitate people to question and go in search of.
It's been great. I've had very devout Catholics come to my seminars with the Da Vinci Code clutched to their breast saying, "We've been lied to." I said, "Well, I don't know. You know, we don't have any firm evidence. I mean, we cannot say for a fact that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were married. But I think what we can say is it looks pretty likely."
Well, and it's, you know, I
can't. And who cares?
Well, exactly. But truthfully, you know, having been in the Middle East a lot, you know, really, technically, most rabbis were married in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be unusual not to be, you know? So it's interesting to me that it caused such a stir of emotional trauma for the world when really, in fact, it might should maybe say thank you, Spirit.
Yeah.
You know, and go in a total different direction.
It's a good thing.
Right.
It's
as a therapist, do you have to be careful how you work with people in hypnosis? So sort of maybe people aren't like know that you do regressions about the Bible and kind of jump on the bandwagon.
It's very rare that that occurs. I wondered about that. And in fact, when the messengers first came out, I did get a lot of phone calls from people who said, I think I was there too. But very few, I think, were doing it to jump on the bandwagon. In fact, there's a reluctance to go there.
See, I'd be with you on that one. I wouldn't want to be. I would, you know, it's funny because when the messenger first came out, I just had this knack for picking people who were.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, it really bothers me that how can I pick these people because I can't figure out where I was.
They were picking you.
And I thought, well, maybe I cleaned the Last Supper because I'd know them. Somebody had to do the dishes, you know? It could have been me. I have a sense of humor about
Well, I've met very minor characters.
Absolutely. That's the thing, is too. I think people get hung up on the Mary Magdalene and, you know, the mother or Mary and other, you know, significant people.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there were a lot of really incredible people that supported that group and that family and those teachings.
And there have been sessions that I've done with people who caught a glimpse of Jesus once. Or was a stable boy, or one, a really cool woman in Portland, was reported saying, it was my stable where Jesus was born. A little, you know, just really touching in for a moment. Or being changed forever by standing there watching the crucifixion and saying, why was this good person killed? Not all major figures at all, and almost always with a humility about it. Could I have been? Why me? I'm not, you know, could I be worthy to
hold
this energy?
You know, I found that with the double halos, too.
Yeah.
You know, like that many of them were on the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
You know, in the crowd. And I believe that energy touched people like that. I mean, you know, when you're in the presence of someone who is highly developed, you can tell the energy is totally different. So it's amazing. So are we going to expect a third book, a trilogy?
Yes, it's in the works.
Yay!
And it's different this time. The third book is going to be all about the modern people that I have been working with who've tapped into this archetype and what they're doing with it today.
That would be fascinating.
Because there's no point in just saying, oh, in a past life, I was Ruth, the sister of Yeshua. If the only reason to tap into that would be to say, well, isn't that interesting or aren't I special? Kind of the next step here is, okay, what are you going to do with that?
Well, you know, I really agree with that because I always tell clients that, you know, clients will call me and they'll be very interested in doing past life. And I go, why? Why are you doing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're doing it to overcome something that's bothered you all your life, like, you know, claustrophobia or fear of something, or you're doing it out of interest, you know, that you're going to bring something forward from that past life, it's great. But if you're just hung up on who you were and doing it, you know, getting addicted to past life regressions, people get addicted to strange things, then it's not for their highest good, you know?
It is who you are today.
Yeah, it's
who, not who you've been.
Yeah, it's exactly. Just, what are you going to do with what you got and what, you know, what you're bringing forth from those lifetimes into the here and now? And so it's very, I think, interesting about, you know, the messages in this book. And so
what I would say to the, you know, my brothers and sisters who are tapping into these archetypes from 2,000 years ago is, let's not dance that same old dance. Let's not get over involved with sacrifice and victimization and
drama.
Yeah, we can do better. Let's grow these up. And I see it. I see it.
What do you hope people gain from your book, The Sisterhood? I want a lost sisterhood.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm hearing from people. That that they are gaining from it. One, and the most primary one is women are reclaiming their spiritual authority. They're getting it that they don't need a priest or a rabbi or a husband to talk to God and then get back to them later. They're saying, okay, I have direct access. I am my own spiritual authority.
I want to mention here, too, your website because, excuse me, we'll get so deep in discussion we might forget. It is www.julieingram.com.
Julia.
Julia.
J-U-L-I-A.
Thank you. JuliaIngram.com. And because she has wonderful information on and it has a cover of the book and everything. So I want my listeners to get the opportunity
Thank
to check
you.
Out your website.
So The Lost Sisterhood is the book about the women. For you who have loved The Messengers and been sad that it's been out of print for a couple of years, it is back in print.
Which we're so excited
and
about.
A new 10th anniversary edition. I wrote a new introduction and kind of brought the, you know, like readers up to date, and GW wrote something at the end. It's very lovely. So that book is now available, too.
I'm excited that that's back in print because I still to this day have people that I refer to that book. It does have something that really nourishes, especially men. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's amazing that when that book came out, the influx of men to seminars was amazing.
Yeah, a nice role model. Nick's been a very nice role model for men.
But I do think that Da Vinci Code and then having your book follow on the footsteps of that. Women are really ready to find their power, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, every time you say that, somebody thinks, you know, that you're into that time period of chauvinism, you know, where we want to open our own doors. And I'm not talking about that, ladies. I'm talking about the inner strength and power of being a woman who can really find her way and knows that she is a good healer or a good therapist or whatever you're good at. You know, that's not ego. That's called self-esteem and self-empowerment.
Exactly. And that balance of masculine and feminine qualities within oneself. So men are also healing the archetype of the feminine inside of them. Men love the Da Vinci Code.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's because it was a thriller. I think it's because there is a thirst for the feminine. And within men as well.
How do you think Holy Blood, Holy Grail plays into this as well? Because don't they have information in that book, too, that kind of goes into all of this?
Well, there's a whole other stream, a whole other reality, if you will, that Mary Magdalene went to the south of France after Yeshua was killed. And
I'm so
Holy
glad you
Blood,
brought
Holy
that up.
Grail and, huh?
I'm so glad you brought that up.
That book and all of Margaret Starbird's books are about that. Curiously, I have no clients ever report any of the Mary Magdalenes that I've worked with report going to the south of France. So
I think it's just
a different reality.
Interesting, but there is a real big a lot of churches, a lot of places dedicated to her there.
Well,
interesting.
Yeah, so that's a whole discussion we could get into. Some people have said they can trace this back to a brilliant PR movement, that some of the priests in France wanted some attention and wanted to bring more visitors, and said, well, how can we do that? Oh, no, we'll create a cult of Mary Magdalene. That'll do it.
I think him and Constantine must have been talking.
You know, we can't find enough documentation to ever really find
yet
the truth. What we can find is kind of the inner archetypal wisdom within people, and it's as much about what it is we wish it were and what we need it to be.
What we need to find is a few more Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's
who would hope, right?
Thanks for bringing that up. Since the Lost Sisterhood came out, there have been two other significant books that are from the Nag Hammadi Library, and these are the documents that were found in Egypt, near Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't think they've all been interpreted, have they yet?
They've all been translated.
Okay.
Hello?
And I think. The major interesting ones. Are you still there?
I think that means we have a caller. Hello?
Akira?
Yes?
Hello. This is Betty from Bothell.
Oh, hi, Betty.
I'm truly enjoying the program.
Thank you.
And I find it absolutely fascinating that Julia is so upfront and whatnot about everything. I have a question. Hopefully she can answer it.
Oh, good. Ask away.
I'm hoping that... I'm hoping that she can tell me whether or not.
Hello?
Yes, and I'm wondering if in the past life regressions, although I'm a healer and psychic and medium also, I get a certain point where I get to prosperity and then I regress. And I'm wondering if there is a place in my life where I can go back to so that I can overcome this lack.
That's an excellent use of past life regression. I think all blocks and all irrational fears have their root in past lives. And so I don't do past life readings. You can go to Atira for that. But I help people access their past life story through hypnosis. Once you go back and you find the root of that, You can heal it, you can change it, you can shift it in a moment.
So just as you could go back and get over fear of heights, you could go back and get over the abundance issue.
Sometimes we've cursed ourselves in past lives. Sometimes we're paying penance. Sometimes we've deprived others of the ability to make money, so you may be doing a penance lifetime. You may have, I had a money issue. And I realized that it came from my most recent past life during the stock market crash.
And that would do it.
I lived in New York City, and my husband jumped out of the window and committed suicide over losing everything. And my thought at that moment was, that was a stupid reason to die. I'm never going to place that much importance on money. And that became a problem for me. Until I found that story within myself and shifted that. I place importance on money. Is the word that I... You
thank
know,
you, Betty. I hope we answered it. The question.
Yeah, she... If she
oh,
wants
she's to, off, I guess. Okay.
No, I'm here.
Oh, no, I hope we answered the question. So I think the answer is yes, you probably could pursue it through past life regression.
All right.
Thank
great.
You, Betty.
Keep up the great work. Love you.
Thank you. Love you, too.
Bye-bye.
That is a great question, though.
Yeah.
That's a great question because, you know, people are so focused on their finance, and I think, you know, a trap is a trap, and sometimes we can't figure out why we're stuck.
Well, all the major themes that I'm sure you hear about, why don't my relationships work, sometimes the answers to that are in past lives. Why can't I have success in my career? Sometimes the answer lies in past lives. Why am I so afraid to be a healer? That is the next archetypal story that's showing up in my sessions now. More than the Holy Family, now I'm seeing people who have been accused of heresy or witchcraft. So you say next books. I've got two in the works, and that is.
Well, we should talk on that one.
It's amazing how many.
For me, it was a big issue going public.
I bet it was.
Because I was absolutely. I knew. It would cost me big time, and a full blown dream about it being burned. So I can relate to that.
Witch
one
burning.
Big time.
Yeah. I want to. While you were mentioning my website. I wanted to mention also that I am now teaching past life regression facilitation. I do workshops to teach people how to help other people access past lives. These are 5-day intensive seminars, and there's information on my website about that. Just look at that.
And mention the website.
The training site, www.juliaingram.com. I'm also, if I can pitch something else, if you're listening from the Portland area or can get yourself to Portland tomorrow night, I'm giving a seminar at the New Renaissance Bookshop on the 10th anniversary of The Messengers.
Oh, I'm sad you're so close and I can't get down there.
Well,
darn.
I'll probably be doing this up at East West.
Do you do these workshops to teach just in your area, or are you on the road with them?
The past life regression facilitation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mostly I'm on the road with them.
Wonderful. Well, uh-huh. We'll have to manifest you coming to Seattle.
Yeah.
That would be
so
exciting. So, Betty, save your money. We'll get her up here, and we'll learn all about how to do this and activate and get rid of our poverty mentality.
It's such a powerful tool. I want to clone myself. I want past life regression therapists. I want as many past life regression therapists as there are massage therapists.
Well, you know, I really think, I love that you're that way, because I believe that that's really about the work, you know, that we are past this time of there's not enough for everybody. Because, you know what, the more light workers we have, whatever that is, therapists, massage, healers, readers, the better the world's going to be, and I'm all for it. So,
well,
so
I'm excited. I think we're at a point in history where we can change the world.
Oh, I don't think that's a question. I think we are changing the world.
Good.
We are showing up, and more people. You know what I've seen, Julia, in my work that is so I'm so thrilled over is that more men in corporate America. I'm reading for lawyers and judges and CEOs now.
Good.
So the world is changing.
Good.
They're going in search of, and they're questioning. And I really think a lot because of the books like The Da Vinci Code.
Uh-huh.
Businesswomen, I think your book is really affecting them. I don't think we've always had permission to go in search of, and I think books like yours are opening the doors for that.
Well, I think that's why I am now seeing this wave of people who have memories of being accused of heresy or witchcraft or sometimes both, and then hung or stoned or burned at the stake. I think it's because of that, our increasing ability and our desire to be healers without, you know, like 25 years of schooling, you know, all those papers all over the wall, and also that kind of that rising fundamentalism that's going after people again. So there's this kind of archetypal fear. Oh, what if I think especially with gifts like yours.
Well, I have to say, my mother was Southern Baptist. You know, I spent a lot of time in the church getting fixed because, you know, it was very frightening for her. She was from Alabama, and so it was very frightening for her to have a child that could know things, do things, you know.
Yeah.
Fine line for them, whether it's prophecy and it's okay, you know, in the Bible and it's heresy. So certainly I can relate. I love that you would write a book about that because I think, you know, a lot of us, did have, you know, waste a lot of precious time that we could have been doing our
being
work.
Frightened.
Being afraid.
Uh-huh.
Being afraid, absolutely.
Your little light on
and
the
I
position.
Have to tell you, still to this day, there are times when I step on stage and I have that moment of, you know, are the rocks going to fly? You know, I don't think it's still all the way out of me. You know, they're just, it's been ingrained, you know?
Are the rocks going to fly?
Are the rocks going to fly?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are times when I'm just like, you know, that it comes, like, in that moment, I'm there again, experiencing it. So I know that in my past, that stuff hangs out.
Yeah.
So I think your new book's going to set a lot of ladies free, a lot of incredible women free.
I think so.
It's exciting. So I love that you're teaching, too. I think that's so exciting because one of the things when the messenger came out, people would call me and they want, and I said, Julia is only one person. She can only do so many regressions.
Yes.
And at that time, you were like over the top.
I had quite a long waiting list.
Yeah, you had to take some downtime
uh-huh.
to write your books and things. So
right.
I know that's really, it's wonderful that you're teaching because I do think, you know, that's the gift in this, too, is to share our gifts as women with
yeah.
each other. So I'm going to put you on the spot. If you only have a short time to deliver the true message from the Lost Sisterhood, you know, can you kind of sum it up? Because I want people to really go and read this book because I think it's powerful.
Oh, thank you. Well, the sisterhood is no longer lost.
That's the greatest part, isn't it?
Sisterhood is very strong on the planet right now. I mean, women meeting together, women helping each other. And the feminine in men is also getting stronger, where men are less afraid to tap into that feminine side of themselves. I think these are great times to be alive. I think the culture is shifting in a way that it's never shifted before, and that we have opportunities, as I said earlier, not only just to reenact these old stories, but to heal these old stories and get a more mature way of behaving. Finally, I just say that if you are a healer, step out and do it. If you are an archetype of Mary Magdalene or one of these other visionary women, be bold, assume your rightful place as leaders, and men, listen to the women.
I think that's wonderful. And I encourage women, if you're interested in these things, there's some wonderful books out there, not just your book, but many, many books on Mother Mary and all this, and form groups, form little research groups and talk and share this knowledge. It's so amazing. I also think we're kind of going into this interesting time where I'm running into a lot of people that are somewhat androgynous.
Yes.
It's almost like they're not male or female. They're kind of neutral.
It's
fascinating to me.
Yes, neither male nor female.
It's almost like they just have this wonderful balance of both.
Uh-huh.
And, wow, if that's the future, it's going to be fun.
I think so.
It's
going to
be exciting. Because they really, in the appropriate time or space, use the right-brained feminine energy or the left brain. I always get those confused. But, you know, it's like the balance is so... It's nice, and you can actually reason with someone who is that way.
Uh-huh.
Could you look at
well,
it from
yeah,
a different point of view?
Well, yeah, and to be androgynous means you can tap into your masculine qualities of aggression and being out there and creating things when needed, and you can tap into your feminine, you're receptive, you're sensitive, you're empathic when needed, and be whole.
It's true. It's a time of, I think we are going into a balance. And in fact, G.W. Hardin actually was talking about on his show where they've really called in his group of sevens,
mm-hmm.
200 of them gathered to call in the feminine energy into the planet. And they felt that was part of their mission. And I'm hearing that from other groups, not
yeah.
just his group, that they're calling in this energy, the female energy. And I think... whether we can ever prove Mary Magdalene was married to Jesus or not, I think she had a very powerful role in the Bible. I think there's tons yet to research on it, and I think we'll be questioning all of this for many decades.
For your listeners who love to read, the latest edition of Ms. Magazine has a wonderful essay on Mary Magdalene and... From a feminist point of view, that don't get into the place where you're thinking, well, Mary Magdalene was a great help to Yeshua so that he could do what he came to do. They're saying, oh, no, 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 no. We need to take that much further. Let's let Mary Magdalene be the icon of a feminine leader, one that is in her own right was a visionary, not somebody who helped a male become fulfill his potential. I love that article.
Well, I think it's true. I think sometimes we always think that the female always has to help the male, and I think sometimes, it's balance. That two people can pull a wagon up a hill a lot easier than one. you know, in balance. Oh, I hate our time is almost gone.
Okay.
Oh, I hate this so much. I really found that this book just opened people to really floods of memories, too. I think people who had lives in the Bible, just like the messenger, it kind of opened the floodgates as a trigger. It's almost like a mini regression because you're reading about it and it touches some core aspect in you to understand those roles.
Yeah.
I think there has not been a lot of books out there that let women realize the powerful role of women in the Bible.
I agree.
You know, I mean, I got to tell you, a lady that goes running off on a donkey that pregnant, it's got to be my saint. It has to be in a stable. Come on.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it is like that's a hard job, you know, having a baby anywhere, much less in a stable. And Mary Magdalene's role, I mean, I just really, even when you read about her where she sees Jesus' resurrection, I guess I would say, or when he's risen, which is really amazing to me because it's exactly how you see spirit, you know, once somebody's transcended. There's so much in the Bible that I think people are rethinking with a scientific and an aware mind of the now. And so reading about these women who have had, I think, very in-depth memories, very strong emotional memories, and the way you wrote it is fabulous.
Thank you.
You know, it makes you, it fills your energy as a woman with more insight and also the nurturing.
Well, it's available at East West Books for you who are listening in Seattle and in Portland at the New Renaissance Bookshop. Amazon.com carries it, and there's some other places if you want to go to my website, other bookstores that carry it.
I encourage you to check out East West, www.eastwest.com, because I really love supporting little bookstores. I know Amazon's out there, but you know the little bookstores have been around, and they really support our work, so check it out. I know that you have been also here and come to Crystal Voyage, I believe. Hopefully you'll come back to Seattle. Again, you're doing something this weekend?
Tomorrow night. At the New Renaissance Bookshop.
In Portland, and support New Renaissance. I don't know their website. Do you know their website? Is it
New Hold on just a second. I got it right here. www.newrenbooks. newrenbooks.com. Wonderful place.
Julia, thank you so much for your time. I look forward
to
having you back, I hope, with the next book.
Yeah.
And I just wish you lots of angel blessings, and thank you for being on my show today and sharing the wisdom of the sacred sisterhood. I love this so much. And hopefully next week we will have Richard Scholler, a medium, on, and he's a medium from New York City, and you'll get to have an experience with him. He's a delight. And till then, please check AngelScribe, www.angelscribe.com, as well as bbsradio.com. Thank you for keeping us on the airwaves. And until we talk again, make sure you stay wrapped in your wings of your angel and keep that heart light shining bright. Lots of blessings. Bye.